listening to Get Sports Radio.
Podcast episode number 12. It's our 2017 NFC South primer coming your way here on Monday, July the 24th. I'm your host, Dan Claskins, back with you once again, and really appreciate you for checking in as we continue to take our dive inside our divisional previews today. One of my favorite fantasy divisions to talk about, the NFC South. We'll be talking about it with one of my favorite friends in fantasy as well, Joe Pisapia. He'll be checking in from the Fantasy Black Book and all of his other things here in just a second as we dive into a team-by-team preview. Did want to get you caught up on a few notes. If you're new to the podcast, thanks for joining. You can always subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud as well. Plus, you can follow me on Twitter, at Dan Claskins. Check out the show. It's on SiriusXM Radio on the weekends right now, Fantastics Insider Football, myself and James Adams, back for a sixth season there. And then, of course, be sure to check out all my articles and rankings at Pro Football Focus. Got a great deal right now I'm offering on getting the Pro Football Focus package, the Edge or the Elite package. If you buy them on our site here, GetSportsInfo.com, the link there, you can get my email advice for free. All season long, be sure to check that out. And also while you're there, check out what's going on. The Kentucky Fantasy Football State Championship's back, the KFFFC. Coming here to Cincinnati on August 20th. We'll be in Louisville for 3 days. If you're actually in the region and in the area, love to have you come and draft against me and some of the best players around the country in the main event. If not, you can also check out the online leagues. Get all the details there, KFFFC.com. And we are fired up now to get into some divisional talk. And as I said, this episode, our friend in fantasy, Joe Pisapia, you know him from the Fantasy Black Book and all over the radio dial and podcast world. Joe, we know you're a busy man, so it's always good to catch up with you, though, and I'm loving it once again.
I'm never too busy for you, Dan Claskins, and I'm never too busy to talk football for sure, and I appreciate you having me.
Yes, it actually works a little better in a podcast format, because when I used to have you on the local radio show, we only had like 8 minutes. I mean, heck, me and you could go 8 minutes on like one topic without even thinking about it. So I like the free form podcast, to where, you know, we try to stay on track and keep it condensed down. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't have a hard out to work around.
Yeah, that's a lot easier. I'm very chill right now. We're in the NFC South. I'm going to have a cocktail, put my feet up. It feels very relaxed. I mean, New Orleans, I'm going to choose New Orleans of all four of these teams to hang out in. That's, Tampa's a little too humid for me.
Yes. You know what? I've actually hung out in all the cities, and they're all very much fun for different reasons. But I'm with you. New Orleans probably takes the bill in that regard, especially certain times of the year there. But, Joe, before we dive into this, as I said, I mean, I think you're the, like, one of the only dudes I know that actually have more jobs and more things going on than me. So,
and that's saying something.
For those of my listeners and people that maybe haven't had a chance to catch you anywhere, let's tell them where they can get you, man.
Well, they can get the new Fantasy Football Black Book 2017. It's number one on Amazon Fantasy Sports. This is the 10th book, believe it or not, in the Black Book series in the last 6 years. So that's 10 between baseball and football, and all 10 of it number one this year. It's myself writing, obviously, doing the relative position value stuff, which is what I do with the Black Book. And I have Jake Seeley working with me. Gary Davenport did all the defensive rankings from IDP Sharks and all the IDP stuff. All the player profiles are all Gary's. And Sammy Reed did all the Fantasy Insiders DFS stuff, which is great. Sammy's one of the best DFS guys out there. The DFS chapter in the Black Book this year is terrific. So you can get that for Kindle. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it for iTunes through the free Kindle app. And you can hear me on FNTSY Radio every day, 4 to 6 Eastern. That's live or the Drive Time Show on Target Fantasy. It's myself, Jake Seeley, Benny Ricciardi. You can hear me every Tuesday night on the Black Book Show. You can hear me every Sunday for the pregame on FNTSY Radio and the postgame for NFL. Yeah, I need a nap. I'm just talking about this stuff.
Dude, game like days are going to be really tough on you
this
year.
Here's what I figure. Game day, I'm going to wake up. I do the morning show. Then I just hang out, watch football with my kids, maybe make a nice big Italian Sunday dinner, put the meatballs on, do the whole thing, make some garlic bread, some pasta.
We sit. I've seen pictures of your meatballs, and that looks pretty good.
That's I know what I'm doing, you know. and then at night, you know, I figure after we watch all the football, we hang out, then we do a little, you know, a little recap at night. But all that you can listen to with the free app on Google Play for FNTSY Radio and for iTunes as well. And that's great because all the shows are on demand. The shows are really fun there, and it's free, so it doesn't get much better than that.
We like free stuff, that's for sure, and as is this podcast, and as is the advice we're about to give you here. Let's dive into it, man. And yeah, we are talking about, in my opinion, one of the top divisions there are in fantasy to have a discussion. You know, we do these divisional preview podcasts. I do the shows similarly on the SiriusXM show, but I mean, I look down at each one of these teams, and I think there are things to get excited about. And we'll start with the defending NFC champion, Atlanta Falcons. And it's going to be a little bit of a different look this year in that offense. Kyle Shanahan, the play caller from the Super Bowl run, he is now in San Francisco as the head coach. And what's left here with the Falcons is a lot of the same pieces, at least from a skill position standpoint, but some uncertainty on how it's all going to have an impact. And Joe, I mean, how are you approaching the guy at the top of this offense this year when we talk about Matt Ryan? I mean, an unbelievable season a year ago. Is this a guy that could repeat that effort here in 2017?
I think repeating the effort would be difficult, but I think he's certainly viable. He is the poster child of why in single quarterback leagues you wait, because he went undrafted in so many, and he turned in an MVP season. So if you're reaching for quarterback outside of, you know, that Rodgers, Breeze, Brady group at a six-point touchdown where you may be okay, maybe second, third round, you want to start reaching for those guys. Okay, I understand it. It's not necessarily what I would do, but there's no reason. There's no reason to reach for those guys necessarily because there you go. There's Matt Ryan. I would say this. I think that if anything, I would hope to see a little bit more active Matt Ryan in terms of changing the play at the line of scrimmage. I think everybody was pretty unhappy with some of the play calling at the end of the Super Bowl. Now, I wasn't because I'm a Patriots fan, so I loved the play calling. I thought it was spectacular. But I think that maybe, you know, keeping the shell of the offense intact, which I think it's going to, as you mentioned, the personnel is completely intact year over year. And I think, if anything, maybe this becomes a little bit more of an active Matt Ryan in terms of making his own calls a little bit more when, you know, he's earned that. He's been a veteran in the league now for a couple years. This is not new for him. So I would expect a good year for Matt Ryan. An MVP season, I think, would be asking for a lot, especially as we get here and we keep talking about some of the guys. I've got some thoughts on Julio Jones and his ability to stay on the field, which I'm a little concerned with.
Yeah, that's a topic we'll certainly get to here momentarily. But, I mean, Ryan, I mean, he's always been a decent passer. But before last season, we're looking at a player that finished 13th, 8th, and 23rd in the previous three seasons in his per-game production there. So I do like the fact he didn't turn the ball over a lot last year. That was something that was sort of a problem of his there for a season or two. But 38 touchdowns, only 7 picks, not since Kurt Warner. And the greatest show on turf season there in 2000 has a quarterback average more yards per attempt than Ryan did a year ago. So I do think there's some regression. I mean, you look at the ADP data out there right now, and I'm looking at Matt Ryan going as QB4 off the board now, slightly ahead of Andrew Luck in the fifth round. I just don't see myself. I'm a wait on the quarterback type of guy usually anyway. I don't mind going after Rodgers or Brady if they slip there or Breeze, but Matt Ryan in the fifth round, I'd rather wait a few more rounds and get some of these other guys. But you bring up Julio Jones, so let's go to him. I mean, durability's been a concern. Sounds like it is for you as well.
It is, and, you know, 3-foot surgeries. And, you know, the other thing about Julio, and this is something I've been talking about a lot lately, and anybody who plays daily fantasy will get what I'm talking about. And if you're just a season-long person, it makes sense, too, if you think about the idea. You know, Julio is a great GPP wide receiver in daily fantasy. He's capable of having that 200-yard game and that huge, ridiculous point total that carries you that week. He's also capable of having those quiet games. And the difference between a wide receiver like him and a wide receiver like Jordy Nelson, you know, it's, do you want the 35 points and then the 10 points the next week? And sure, the averages are going to be high at the end of the year. The stats are going to look really gaudy. But week to week, sometimes there's a big variable. And a guy like Nelson or, you know, some of the other ones where you could say, well, they're a little bit more steady. Maybe they lack quite the ceiling of Julio. But you also got to start to get in mind that this is another year older. It's another foot surgery deep. And I'm not saying I would bump Julio Jones out of the first round. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just saying that I think you have to have that expectation and understanding heading into ownership of him this year that you might want to surround him with some really quality, high-volume receivers just to counteract those weeks where he doesn't have those big-time Julio games.
Yeah, those injuries have existed since his days in college, and he's missed time now in four of his six seasons as a pro, so all justified there. But I do like the fact the guy's averaged over 100 yards per game in each of the last four seasons, and I would like to see him get a little bit more involved in the red zone. And you look at the other pieces in this passing game. I mean, Taylor Gabriel, he was their best scorer a year ago. He, really big part of the offense. He scored seven touchdowns in his final eight games. Sort of a gadget guy. I mean, I don't know. He's a guy that I don't mind having on my bench. I like him a little bit more in standard formats. Mohamed Sanu, I'm familiar with him, obviously, as a Bengal fan. He'll catch his 60 to 70 passes, and it might be useful for a week or two off the bench. But not the point being, there's really not a lot to get excited about from a fantasy perspective. Although I am a little excited about second-year tight end Austin Hooper. What do you think of him here in 2017?
Well, I think Hooper is, you know, here's the danger, okay? We don't want to overrate guys because everybody's great in camp. Everybody's excited. Everyone's going to be a focal point of the offense, but you know, we all know when push comes to shove, if we look back on this year, this information, the same kind of preseason information back in the summer of 2016, we can read that about a lot of guys that didn't turn out to be that. So everything is always rosy and glossy right now. I think Hooper is a guy in those deeper leagues who's certainly worth paying attention to. I think the talent is there. And I think he's one of those guys that you would want everybody to be healthy around him in order for him to succeed. It's not a situation where, oh no, Julio's banged up, that elevates Hooper. I think it's just the opposite. I think a healthy Julio Jones helps Hooper's development. And just to put in perspective for Matt Ryan too, in an RPV situation, so that's the Black Book theory, is relative position value, comparing a player to his peers. Matt Ryan is, even with the projections, with last year's numbers, with everything together, it gives you a percentage, right, of the top 12 quarterbacks. And Matt Ryan is a minus one, which means he is your league average quarterback. So reaching for Matt Ryan on name value isn't a great idea. If you can get Matt Ryan, let's say maybe after Cam Newton or Russell Wilson or Mariota somehow, he's floating around, then yeah, he's a good get there. But he is not a positive in terms of fantasy league average. You're not going to have an advantage by having Matt Ryan as your quarterback, especially if you take him sooner rather than later.
The backfield is where there is some definite fantasy value to talk about, too. I mean, these guys last year, I mean, Tevin Coleman, if he wouldn't have got hurt, Freeman. I mean, you're talking about two guys that could both finish inside probably the top 24, 25 at the position. Freeman, obviously, a little bit more utilized because of Coleman's injury last year. Definitely on passing downs. He caught 83% of the passes thrown his way last year. And I think that helped him, obviously, get the total yards per game up there to where he was viable. Actually, his 106 total yards per game were third, only behind Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson. But as we alluded to, Coleman's hurt last year a little bit. I mean, he's definitely a different type of runner, more of a straight-line runner, you know, bigger guy. So, I mean, there is a way for both of these guys to get involved. But without Kyle Shanahan there calling plays, this is the one thing that really, really makes me wonder about the post-Kyle Shanahan era, is can this offense be viable enough for both of these guys to potentially be looked at as starters? I'm backing off Coleman a little bit. I still view Freeman more as a low-end RB1, like him a little better in PPR formats. Don't think he's an elite guy, but Coleman to me is a player that I'm scared of as a Freeman owner, but at the same time, I'm not jumping all in on him either.
I made a bold prediction, quote-unquote, last year at the beginning of the year that Devonta Freeman would continue to be the guy that everybody is not thrilled with, but the guy that's going to return good value and the guy that's going to be right at the probably around the turn heading into drafts next year. We had to do bold predictions last year on the radio before the season started, and it's funny, you go back and look at the 2015 numbers next to the 2016 numbers, and they are nearly identical. Actually, the rushing average went up, but yeah, the touchdowns are identical. The receiving yards went down a little bit, but even the overall TDs are within one. He basically had the exact same season, so Tevin Coleman doesn't scare me at all. it's not even a question for me. I'd rather have Devonta Freeman. It's not even close. And yeah, you know, sometimes it's not going to be sexy. Sometimes it's not going to be this guy that's going to roll out there, and you might always have this guy nipping at his heels or that guy nipping at his heels. But I'll tell you what, until all of a sudden one of those guys really starts to eat into those carries, I'm not buying it. I'm a Freeman guy all the way in this backfield.
Let's move on to the Carolina Panthers, and you look at the situation here. I mean, they added a first-round pick, Christian McCaffrey, a nice playmaker, very needed playmaker there. They also beefed up on the offensive line at left tackle, Matt Khalil taking over for Mike Orr. And the talk here, and the thing is Cam Newton. I mean, here's the guy that fantasy owners have been all over or totally against. I mean, last year was a bit of a disappointment after a season earlier when Cam Newton was the best fantasy quarterback out there and carrying owners to championship. Joe, they're talking about him running even less this year. And if he's not running, Cam Newton's just not a fantasy quarterback I'm all that crazy about.
I'm with you 100%. And I'll tell you something else, too. You know, I couldn't tell in the press conference if he won the game or lost the game. And not because he's calm, because he's basically whining regardless. And that bothers me. As a quarterback, you're the leader of the team. You know, it's one thing to be out there in a press conference and, you know, I understand if you're upset in a loss, but he seemed to be upset in a win. He seemed to just be miserable last season. And I understand he took some shots, especially early in the year, and I know some of them were on the borderline. But you're the leader of a team, and there's still that maturity aspect. And I know it doesn't always show up in the stat line, but it does in some ways. And I think that's another hesitancy I have with Cam Newton. And in fantasy terms, if he's not running, which I certainly do agree that they're going to continue to scale him back, which means less rushing touchdowns, which means less yardage, which means that a Cam Newton was going to be forced into the pocket to continue to develop as a pocket passer. And again, when you're looking in the single quarterback league, in the super flex, it's different. But in the single quarterback league, there's just no reason to reach. You can get a Kirk Cousins who threw for almost 5,000 yards, you know, plenty of rounds later.
Yeah, and Cousins is a guy I love, so that's a whole nother conversation.
But that's another podcast.
Yeah, that'll be a different episode. But as far as Newton goes, I mean, you're right. I mean, he's a below-average passer. Let's just call it what it is. You're talking about a guy that's averaged 223 passing yards in his last 45 starts. Out there, just 61 touchdowns. He's never been accurate. He completed a league low 53% of his passes a year ago, and inside the 10-yard line is where he's really sketchy. I mean, you look even in his breakout season of not necessarily breakout season, but his blow-up campaign of 2015, you're talking about a guy that only threw 12 TDs on 33 attempts inside the 10-yard line. So when you get closer to the goal line, you got to make those decisions quicker. Space becomes tighter. I mean, he's made a do for it by being able to rush for touchdowns, but if those things start falling off, then I want nothing to do with Newton. And you know, that sort of translates right over to his receiving core. Kelvin Benjamin, Devin Funchess, really the only two guys, incumbents anyway, to talk about. They've added second round pick Curtis Samuel, who's sort of a hybrid, you know, by far one of the fastest players on their team after he ran a 4.31 at the combine. But I don't know, Benjamin, Funchess, Samuel, any of these guys, players that you can endorse, and if and where at any point you start considering them. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin, I always have him beneath the expert consensus rankings when I put it up there at Fantasy Pros, because guys still view him in their 20s in their rankings. I've got him right now, I think 32 at receiver and standard, and I'm not even all that confident in that, to be honest.
No, and I can understand why. I think Benjamin's best format is best ball, because I think he'll have a couple games where eventually, if you look at last year, I mean, if I just pull away the data, right, and you say, okay, this is a guy with 950 yards and 7 touchdowns as a receiver. You like that, right? You're like, okay, I can roll with that. The problem is the way that they came, and they, you know, came in bunches early on where all of a sudden you thought, okay, maybe Benjamin's going to really take a step here and, you know, build on that rookie campaign that, you know, surprised even the people I think that really were high on him. I think in best ball format, you like Benjamin, you can roll with him, it's fine. You go back to that week-to-week situation, and it gets dicey. Like, that's where it gets dicey, and I keep talking about these guys, and I'm with you. I will probably own 0 shares of Kelvin Benjamin in any sort of standard or PPR league, and there's also questions about in terms of his, you know, physical ability and you know, taking care of himself and all that stuff, which I don't like that in a player. I like players, especially in their youth. It's one thing when you get old and fat and tired like me, and I'm like, you know, whatever, I'm done, and, you know. But, you know, when you're a young guy and you got the whole future ahead of you, at 26, you should be coming into camp in great shape, ready to rock and roll. And that's another thing that's been a question, because he hasn't been in good shape in the offseason.
Yeah, and Funchess, I mean, I was excited about him with his size, 6'4", 225 at some point. It just hasn't translated, so I think he's a reserve player at best. I'm definitely not going to end up with him either. The one guy in the passing game that's been reliable is Greg Olsen, the tight end. I mean, he does catch plenty of passes. 3 years in a row, he's gone over 1,000 yards in receiving, and 32 years old, though, now, doesn't score a lot of touchdowns. Only 3 a year ago. He scored 7 the year before that, but that's when Cam Newton threw 35 touchdowns, mind you. Olsen's obviously still a viable starting option in any format, obviously a little bit better in PPR, but I don't know. He's sort of like, he's not in the top tier, he's not in the back tier, and I'm either going early on tight end, or more often than not, I'm waiting on it, and that's why Olsen just doesn't end up on a lot of my fantasy teams.
You know, you're absolutely right. I think that's the best analysis of Olsen. He's the safe one. So, you know, I can understand why people, you know, think, okay, well, I don't want to, you know, pay extra for Gronkowski, especially with all his injury risks, but when you can have the Kyle Rudolphs and the Hunter Henrys and the guys who are viable with the touchdowns, I think there was a weird patch there where I don't expect him, Greg Olsen, to have 3 touchdowns again. There was a weird drought there where it just was bizarre. He was playing pretty well, but the points just weren't coming. And I think that that'll change itself back a little bit. I think McCaffrey will help that a little bit. And look, if they're in the red zone area, the fact that Cam Newton's not going to be as mobile, you would hope that would also mean a little bit more action for Greg Olsen. But the problem is the ADP, and the problem is the price. I certainly like him more than where Travis Kelce's going right now. I think people are way overrating him coming off of last year. But at the same time, I'd rather keep waiting. I agree with you 100% there. I think it's better in terms of value to take one or even two of those lower-end tight ends and hope that you can get that kind of production, maybe even 80% of Greg Olsen production when all said and done.
Looking at ADP, speaking of value, you look at these running backs, Christian McCaffrey, RB16, round 4.01 right now in the latest data at Fantasy Football Calculator, the 12-team PPR drafts. And meanwhile, you get Jonathan Stewart, RB42, pick 9.05. Sounds like Stewart's still going to be involved here more than people realize, and I don't like Jonathan Stewart at all, Joe, but
likes
I will
Jonathan
say
Stewart.
That
I don't even know if his parents like him. I hope they do, but nobody really likes him.
But there comes a point, 9th or 10th round, it's like, yeah, I think he's being undervalued right now, because I don't think they're going to completely eliminate him. Durability is a concern. He's not a guy you can count on as a starter, but I will, in the 9th and 10th round, if I need a running back and he's sitting there, I'll roll my dice on him over, you know, a guy like, let's say, Matt Forte, for instance, somewhere else in that tier. But my question to you is, how much are you in on Christian McCaffrey here in his rookie season?
Yeah, we played this game the other day on one of my shows on the radio, and the ADP was actually a little bit higher, I think, than what you even had. It was somewhere in the 3rd round with some of the data we were looking at last week. And initially, we all went, oh, man, you know, and it's in the PPR, and we go, okay. And then what happened was we started listing the running backs going after him, the Spencer Wares of the world and some of those other guys. And then we started looking, more importantly, at the wide receiver names. And the names were guys like Martavis Bryant. And they were basically, you know, Crowder. It's this giant chunk of wide receivers of that ilk who I think everybody believes is poised or are poised for a very solid season, if not a very good season. And the reasoning then pertains, and you go, okay, well then McCaffrey should absolutely go there, because the drop-off at running back is much more substantial. And I'm basically guaranteed one of these 8 wide receivers we just talked about on the way back. So why wouldn't I take McCaffrey there, solidify that running back spot in the PPR, take the chance on the young kid, who is certainly a dynamic player, who they would be foolish not to make sure that he is some sort of focal point in the offense, when there really isn't another one, let's be honest. The focal point's not Olsen, the focal point's not certainly not Jonathan Stewart, and it's not Kelvin Benjamin. And yeah, you know what? McCaffrey could very well be the new version of what Cam Newton used to do with his legs. And I think that's exactly the kind of yards that you're trying to fill now, and I think McCaffrey fills that void. And when you look at the depth of wide receiver, why not do it there and then be guaranteed one of those other wideouts that you know can give you pretty much in that same vein of productivity.
Well said indeed. Let's move on our AFC South preview here, the Get Sports Info podcast. Dan Claskins talking with Joe Pisapia of the Fantasy Black Book. And Joe, as we get into these other two teams, I mean, we'll start with the Saints here, and they always have a great offense. And it starts with Drew Brees, now 38 years old, but the guy, just another 5,000-yard season turned out there, and just continuing to just defy Father Time here in the terms of his production. Lost Brandon Cooks. There's his deep play threat. I mean, that obviously seems like a negative impact on him. The question becomes is how big of a negative impact? And Breeze, a guy that you talk about safe and steady. I mean, to me, he is that safe and steady pick. And he's the one I'm probably more likely to own because he's going about a round and a round and a half later than the Rodgers and Brady's. So I see those guys start going off the board. If I want to get an early quarterback, I'm probably pulling the trigger then. But, you know, like I said, I usually don't, to be honest. But at the end of the day, Breeze is worth the investment. My question to you, how much of an impact do you think it will be with the loss of Brandon Cooks in this passing game? I know a lot of people are high on Michael Thomas. I am too, as an individual player, but without the top, without that guy stretching the field like Cooks. Now, they brought in Ted Ginn Jr., who certainly has the speed there to do it, but I'm just wondering, like, the impact of his departure, what it will have on this passing game, and, you know, is Michael Thomas ready to be a wide receiver
one? Well, I definitely think Michael Thomas is ready to be a wide receiver one. It's whether or not that makes him a first-round pick yet, or in that vein.
I don't think I would go first-round.
I don't think I would either, but he...
Late second rounds where I've been seeing him go.
Yeah, exactly.
Mostly,
like, well, where's the potential?
It's not great value, but I think it's a fair investment.
I've seen him so far go, you know, in that early second round, some a lot of dry drafts, because I think most people in the industry are very high on him. And it's funny, if you go back and think about it, and it might be a trick question, I'll just see if you can get it. Who's the only player to ever play with Drew Brees as a receiver of any capacity to ever be taken in the first round?
That's interesting. I have no idea.
Right. It's a tough one when you go back and look. The answer is Jimmy Graham, who at one point had a very, you know, that huge, coming off that huge year. He was being taken towards the end of that first round a couple years ago. I think it was 2014 or something.
I was trying to think of some Chargers. I thought you were giving me a real trick question.
No, but
there.
If you go back, it's amazing when you go back and look at the data. Colston, although he had some years that are in that wide receiver one statistical discussion, never a guy that you're thinking of as...
Well, Colston and Graham, they have something in common with Thomas, and that's their big frames. Right. I mean, these guys are big pass catchers.
Right. And I think when you go back, I think that's going to should put Michael Thomas in perspective for you, no matter how high you are on him. You know, if you think you're drafting him and he's going to end up being in that Julio Odell Beckham range, I think that's, when all said and done, I think that's a little bit of a lofty expectation. So how you build your team is very important. I love Michael Thomas. I think he's terrific. I don't think the loss of Brandon Cooks is going to make too much of a difference, because I think at the end, Drew Brees, the reason why you don't get that number one guy is because Drew Brees historically will always find the open guy and make things work. And because he does that, it'll always allow for a guy like Michael Thomas to eventually continue to have the production that you expect from Michael Thomas. I just think it's going to be capped a little bit. So just because Cooks is gone now and he's the number one, don't think that all of a sudden that's going to turn him into anything more than a very good 1A wide receiver, because I think that's exactly what he is, which is terrific. But he is a step below that elite tier.
I totally agree. I mean, you hit the nail on the head for how I feel about him. I think where I'm struggling a little bit is to figure out, okay, where else in this receiving core is there some fantasy value? I see the hype train starting to roll a little bit now on Willie Snead. And I mean, he's been fine. He especially was good inside the 10. I mean, over the last 2 years, he's caught 8 of his 13 passes that way, including his 4 touchdowns. But you're still talking about a player with just 7 touchdowns over his last 30 games. I mean, granted, opportunities are going to pick up here, but I don't know. Willie Snead, I've seen him sneaking into the top 30 in some people's rankings. I'm not quite prepared to go there with him. But I don't know. Is Snead a guy you're buying here in 2017?
No. I'm not, and I'll tell you why. It's not because I'm ranking on Willie Snead. It goes back to that same thing as Drew Brees spreads the ball around. Willie Snead is going to be that guy that will have a best ball. Again, you go back to the best ball where I look at the end of the year, Willie Snead will have some numbers that'll be worth it. But if you're talking head-to-head leagues and in any capacity, Willie Snead's up and down productivity, it's not going to be any different than the Lance Moores and Devery Hendersons. We can name a million of these guys over the years with Breeze where they're relevant one week,
yes,
and completely irrelevant, and you go and you pick them off of the waiver wire and you're like, okay, this is going to be great, and then you get frustrated for 2 weeks and you drop him and then he has another big game.
That's Ted Ginn Jr. too. I mean, his ADP is not what Snead's is right now. I think Snead's a hair above those guys. I think he's definitely
a
definitive
hair above
wide receiver.
I agree with you, but I'll tell you what, he's going to win some people some DFS weeks too, I'll tell you.
Oh, he's going to have some big plays and a best ball guy, but you know, I look again more like the Devery Hendersons and the Kenny Stills of former Saints offenses. Snead, I think he'll get in there. I don't know if I like him as my. I like him more as a back end wide receiver three than a high end wide receiver three. And I will say with Ginn, I mean, he's 32 now. So, yeah, I mean, I get he's got that big play ability, but you talk about those guys, Devery Henderson, Kenny Stills, some of those guys, only twice in 9 years. Did either of those players catch more than 35 passes in this offense? So I just don't think the volume's going to be there. And a tight end, Kobe Fleener, I mean, please, let's not even waste our breath.
How many balls did he drop in that – just in that Giants game alone? There were so many big drops for Kobe Fleener this year where I think at a certain point – you saw Drew Brees basically say, I have no confidence in you. You know,
he's got a big contract, but that's about it. Plus, he's a liability as a blocker. I'm not buying into him at all.
At all.
You know, I've tried to go after Hill lately, but I don't know. I think he's more waiver wire fodder for me. The real question I think I've got to try to figure out is this running back situation. I mean, clearly they don't like Mark Ingram. I mean, they signed Peterson. They draft Kamara. I find myself just skipping over. I got Ingram like 18 or somewhere between 18 and 20 in my ranks right now. And I get to my spot in the drafts, and it's like him and Lamar Miller are just two names that I keep like passing over on my list because I don't want them. I don't want Mark Ingram. I mean, I think he could do it, but with Peterson there, it's got the Bill Belichick making type of a headache here trying to figure out from a fantasy commodity. I think Kamara will be involved more than people realize in passing situations. I think he's the future there, but I don't know, man. I think Peterson's – I'm not opposed to Adrian Peterson. I think he's being a little overdrafted right now just off his name, so I don't see myself having a lot of shares of this. But do you think there is some value there and some upside in this backfield?
This is a tough one because I love Mark Ingram, and that's a guy that I owned last year and every year, and I was oh so hoping that he would find himself in a new place. I really did. I kept saying, you know, at the end of last year, please let Mark Ingram be somewhere else where they value what he can bring. And then not only does he not move on, then you bring in Adrian Peterson. And I'm thinking to myself, if I'm Adrian Peterson – there's no way I'm going to take a lesser role. I'm going to a place where I think that I'm still going to be the man because I'm Adrian Peterson and I have an enormous ego and I'm a Hall of Famer. So this whole thing is completely just, I mean, foobar. I mean, it's just, I don't know what to make of it. And I'll tell you this, somebody's going to be right. There's going to be people who are going to guess on Ingram and it's going to end up being right because Peterson gets hurt or something happens. Or there's going to be people that guess right on Peterson and he's going to run away with it. And, you know, how many times, well, like we can count them. His rookie season, people left him for dead. Oh, he can't contribute because of the knee injury, and he won me a bunch of championships that year. People, after the ACL tear, people were saying he couldn't do any, he couldn't come back from it, and he had a career season. People, after the year where he was gone for a year because of the child abuse scandal thing, and he came back and had a fantastic season. So every time you write off Adrian Peterson, he likes to stick it to you. And there's a part of me that would love to, I'll tell you this, if I'm in a league for fun, for pride, I'll draft Adrian Peterson just for fun, just to own one share of him. But in any league where there's money involved, I'm not doing it with any of
these guys will end up on roster. I mean, I play in so many leagues. I will have shares of this backfield. I already got a little bit of Kamara in some dynasty leagues, so I'm good there.
I understand. That makes sense.
Yeah, but you know, I'm looking at this latest ADP, and I do use Fantasy Football Calculator a lot, which I find pretty useful. I like the fact that they graph it out over year to year and week to week the way they do. But I'm looking at 12-team PPR data conducted from the past week right now, and this takes into account like a couple thousand drafts. So this is not just a small sample size. Current ADP I'm staring at has Peterson RB21 round 5. I can live with him as a low-end RB2. I don't know if I'm paying that price, but I can support it. Ingram has now fallen into round 6, RB31. If Ingram comes to me that late, even around earlier than that. I mean, I'm jumping on Mark Ingram at that point. So I think it's all about perceived value. I think the value pick could end up being Ingram here, but this is one of those situations, training camp and preseason, I'm really anxious to watch. And I just don't know if we're going to get a definitive answer by the time that the NFL season starts of how this is going to shake out. It could be a week-to-week situation. Let's finish up quickly here, Joe. The Tampa Bay Bucks, whether you know it or not, I'm sort of a closet Bucks fan in a sense. I lived down there in Florida for a few years, and they were my second team behind the Bengals I'd root for. And definitely a Florida State fan, so Jameis Winston. I'm a little biased on him too, but man, I am excited. I've got a lot of Florida friends of mine that are Bucks fans, and they'll tell you this is the most exciting uptick of offense this franchise has ever seen.
Yeah,
I mean, you get a playmaker like Mike Evans, a young quarterback like Jameis Winston, along with all these other, you know, ancillary pieces here, and there is a reason to be excited for sure. Jameis Winston, I'm a little biased, so I'm going to ask you your thoughts on him. But dude, I'm looking at a guy that I think has a long, successful NFL career ahead of him, and I just like his competitiveness. But dude, last year I was thinking he was more of a high-end QB too. This year, I mean, I've got him creeping up in my ranks. I think I got him at 8 right now at quarterback, and I'm pretty confident thinking he's going to be a top 10 guy if he can stay healthy.
If you're looking for someone to shy you away from Winston, I'm not that guy, because I'm in the fan club with you. If you're the president, I might be the vice president or the treasurer or something, because I see all the things you do. I think he's a competitor. I think he's got a great spot around him where these pieces are growing along with him, with Mike Evans. I think bringing in Jackson gives them a deep threat now. A whole different aspect. The tight end position is very strong there. Cameron Brate, don't forget about him just because O.J. Howard's in the mix.
Oh, heck no. I love Brate. Brate's a late-round flyer
I would tell anybody to take. You and me both, because you saw it. See, that's the thing. You know, yeah. Everybody loves this theoretical stuff and projections and all this stuff. Give me what I see with my own two eyes. And if you played any of the games, you know, I always bring this back to, especially in the baseball world, if you played the game at all, you know, and you understand relationships are important between pitcher, catcher. Relationships are important between wide receiver or tight end and quarterback. And that ability to be where you think that guy's going to be and trust them is huge. And Brate showed that last year. And look, the running position, we'll get to the running backs, I'm sure. But yeah, I don't know how that's going to help him this year. But and maybe that also works to the idea of if Winston can even just take a small incremental step forward this year, I think he absolutely is that lower-end quarterback one in fantasy.
He's got to take care of the football. Yeah. I mean, that's what it boils down to. 18 picks a year ago.
Aggressive and wanting to make things happen, but I also think it comes from sometimes feeling a little bit too much pressure of having to make that happen.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I mean, I like to see him complete a little bit better than 61% of his passes, but he does just enough on the ground to get you a couple fantasy points there. I mean, he's ran for some touchdowns here, but I mean, Evans, I don't really even want to waste too much time talking about him. I mean, I think we all would agree he's a stud. I mean, I got him not – I still think he's probably 4 or 5 on my list, but I'm still not shying away from going with him in the first round if that's the way it lands. What about these other receivers? I mean, we talk about DeSean Jackson. He's in the mix now. I've never been a huge DeSean Jackson fan. I mean, in best balls, he works out great, but – to me, I mean, I just have I can never get it right in sticking him in the lineup when he's on my fantasy teams. I like the fact that he's here with the Bucks. Do you think he can really become that weekly starting option as either flex or wide receiver 3 and be a little bit more consistent in this offense than what we saw during his days in D.C.?
You know, at this point in his career, I think we all know what he is, you know, and you nailed it. He's going to have those weeks. He's like the antithesis. You know, at the beginning of the show, we were talking about if you have Julio Jones, you want to get a little bit of, you know, stability, the guys around him, the Crabtrees of the world, where, you know, it's going to be ho-hum, you know, 17 points or 16 points, whatever. You put him in there every week, you know what you get. He's the opposite. He's the guy that if you have a lot of stability, having a home run hitter like a DeSean Jackson can be helpful. And this is why roster construction, I don't think, is discussed enough when we cover fantasy football. And I try to talk about it in the Black Book series. And I think it's important how you're going to get a team on the field every week that's going to put you in a good situation to win. And that's what relative position value is. And that's the tool that to help you understand fantasy is simple. It's about me outproducing you as many times as I can from many spots as I can. And having a little bit of DeSean Jackson type, you know, all or nothing guys is okay. Having a team full of them is going to lead you to basically a 500 record at best.
You got to have balance, man. Veterans, rookies, big play guys, steady guys. It makes sense.
And look, for me, I think you nailed it. Best ball is his best format. Outside of that, you know, if you have the right kind of roster, you can support DeSean Jackson. I do like DeSean. I'm curious to see what he does with Winston, but I'm actually probably a little less inclined for him this year as opposed to last year because it is a new offense and it is a new quarterback. And
it's just a transition period. And I think for receivers, that's understated a lot. I like the fact, I mean, I'm thinking he's going to catch about 70, 75 balls. I mean, 7-8 touchdowns probably if he stays healthy there. But he's tiny, so durability is always a concern
too. I'll
tell
you this too, Dan. If you get a couple of quiet games in a row from DeSean, he's a great trade target because you know it's coming.
Oh, yeah. Throw him out there at least one daily lineup. Yeah. We already sort of hit on the tight ends. I mean, we both think Brate's an undervalued late-round flyer. I'm not big on rookie tight ends. I think Howard's a guy that has a long-term. But let's wrap up by talking about this running back situation because you got Doug Martin. He's out for the first couple games. He was just a disaster last year, just 2.9 yards a carry, lowest in the league for backs with at least 100 attempts. And then you got this mix of players behind him. Just Charles Sims, I've always sort of been a fan of, but been left disappointed. Jaquizz Rodgers still in the mix there as well. Do you think there's any fantasy life in this backfield, Joe? I mean, is there a situation? I think early in the season, who knows what's going to happen with Martin. Now you got Sims and Rodgers. They drafted McNichols. It's like, once again, this is one of those backfields that, yeah, you might grab a guy from it to throw on your fantasy bench, but don't expect much to happen.
If the New Orleans situation is difficult, this one is a disastrous one because at least you know one of them, if they get to run away with it, you know what they're going to be. This problem is, I think it's just the ceiling is very limited for all these guys. With Doug Martin missing the first 4 weeks of the season, that's crucial because you're putting yourself at a deficit when you draft a guy like that, unless you're getting an extreme value on him in a draft, it's extreme discount. That's the only way I would take Doug Martin just for depth. And Rodgers was actually, you know, it's funny, he did well in the daily world because he was so cheap and nobody bought in, and so the ownership percentage was really low, and then the volume was staggering. I mean, this guy was touching the ball 30 times a game, and everyone kept looking at each other thinking, is this for real? Wow, did Jaquizz Rodgers start touching the ball 30 times a game? But if he plays well, what's to stop them from saying, okay, well, it's your job to lose going forward? And that's, I mean, because you have just zero idea what they're capable of, I think it's a situation you avoid altogether. And I hate it because, if anything, what this tells you is those early round running backs are crucial. I don't care if it's PPR. Obviously, we know it in standard, but don't negate those big time number one running backs. Don't discount the Devonta Freemans too much, because you don't want to keep rolling with the headaches of the Ingrams and the Martins and the Rodgers and Petersons and trying to figure it out. Go get the sure things early. There's a lot of depth at wide receiver you can make up ground.
Joe, man, it's always good catching up with you. I mean, I can listen to you all the time, but to actually talk it with you is a much more fun experience for me. So I appreciate you coming on. Before we wrap it up, let's tell folks just one more time about the Fantasy Black Book and all the other places they can hear you talking some fantasy.
Well, first of all, it's always a pleasure talking. I'm glad you were able to spend some time on the show last week with us. You can follow me on Twitter at JoePizzaPS17. The new Fantasy Football Black Book 2017 is available for Kindle, for iTunes, or iBooks, I should say, and paperback. You can hold it in your hand, all available on Amazon. So check it out there and check me out on FNTSY Radio. That's free fantasy sports radio. You can download the free app and listen to On Target Fantasy, The Black Book, all of our NFL coverage. Is going to be great. And keep listening to Dan Klaskins because he knows what the hell he's talking about.
Keep up the good work, man. Another FSTA award could be coming soon for you, brother. And definitely thank everybody for listening to this edition of the Get Sports Info podcast. As a reminder, go to GetSportsInfo.com. You can get the podcast there. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud as well. We're back in our next episode. We're going to be talking some high-stakes fantasy football, some strategies there with Farrell Elliott from the KFFFC. Plus, still ahead real soon, my training camp battles. I'll break down the 10 battles you need to know about as training camp gets ready to knock out. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Klaskins. And be sure to check me out weekend mornings on Sirius XM as well, Sirius 210 XM87. We're back with more the next fantasy football next time here on the Get Sports Info podcast.
Get Sports.